are listening to a free version of Majority Report with Sam Steeder. To support this show and get another 15 minutes of daily program, go to majority.fm, please.
The Majority Report with Sam Steeder.
It is Monday, June 11th, 2018. My name is Sam Steeder. This is the five-time award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live steps from the industrially ravaged Gowanus Canal in the heartland of America, downtown Brooklyn, USA. On the program today, author, journalist, Guy Lawson, on Canada fighting back. Meanwhile, Trump says the G7... fake friends. Supreme Court of the United States okays voter suppression in Ohio. And Trump to meet Kim in Singapore tonight. Insano e Insano.
It's a... But he's a great guy.
Yeah. More reports of horrific conditions of immigrant detainees. And net neutrality dies today while the EPA rolls back and decides a whole class of chemical poisons are okay now. Confirmed, John Kelly's email hacked. An election turned on that. And Florida neglected to run national background checks on tens of thousands of people buying guns. Apparently they didn't have the login. Not kidding. All this and more on today's program, ladies and gentlemen. Yes, another Monday, and tonight at 9 p.m. Eastern, I guess, Donald Trump will be meeting with Kim Jong-un in Singapore. Without anybody except for translators.
Do you have the P tape?
And
wink twice.
Or three times. You know, I don't know. Maybe it'll work out. Let's hope. Maybe Jong-un is smart enough to just be like, yeah, whatever. Let's just do this. And not take Donald Trump too seriously. But I think the thing that people have to, more broadly, as we see Donald Trump basically launch a broadside against the G7 and get into an act of tensions with Canada. Michael Moore, incidentally, looking more and more like a sage. You'll recall he not only predicted that Michigan and Wisconsin would go to Trump in this election, but he wrote and directed, I think his only fiction film was 25 years ago about us attacking Canada. So, or Canada attacking us. I can't remember exactly what the plot line was.
Revenge.
Settling
but,
the
you know,
score.
Just one thing to keep in mind. As these relationships with Europe are strained, I wouldn't say severed, but that it would be wholly irrational for world leaders to look at this country and, you know, I mean, Brendan was saying this to me, like, don't you think they're going to realize that we're going to revert back to form or to the mean? And no, it would be completely irrational for world leaders to look at this country and see anything other than an unstable country, one that elected Donald Trump. That's the reality. Even if it was close, even if it was because of, you know, even if whatever reason you want to give it. Because of the Russians, because of James Comey, because of Hillary Clinton was a uniquely ill-suited candidate. Regardless of what reason you give it, the fact that it happened means that it could happen, and it would be irrational for them to think like, well, okay, maybe next time you get another Barack Obama, and then after that you get another, you know, who knows? Donald Trump Jr. Tom Cotton turns out to be Donald Trump. Who knows? And so this is, we're already now like multiple generations before we could get back to where we are today. Some of our foreign policy, bad, without a doubt. But, and some of it positive. But I'll tell you something, a country with a military our size that is not taken seriously by the rest of the world is a recipe for disaster. Because if you have no soft power, you start using your weapons more. That's my sense. Folks, if you are going to use your weapons, always important to get a good night's sleep. Do you want to feel more rested every day? Well, this is what I did. I've done this twice now. I've actually probably like three major purchases from Brooklinen. Got it for the old place. And then, when my former wife and I split up, first thing I did, before I even got a new apartment, ordered the Brooklinen sheets. And I was able to get the kind that I like, the crisper, like cooler sheets. That after a couple of washings, that cotton gets super soft, stays cool. I love it. I love it. It's one of the best things about not being married. Named the winner of the best online betting category by Good Housekeeping. I'm always in sheets I like now.
Bright side of life.
Exactly. Brooklinen is the fastest growing bedding brand in the world, boasting over 20,000 five-star reviews. Versatile colors and patterns. For me, I am a pinstripe guy. I love my sheets pinstriped. I got multiple versions of the pinstripe, the gray, the dark blue. Unlike most bedding that's marked up as much as 300%, there's no unnecessary markups and fees. This is luxury bedding, underpriced. You have to try these sheets today. My Brooklinen sheets are the best. They're the most comfortable sheets I've ever slept on. And they look good. I look like an adult in these sheets. I mean, Brooklinen.com has an exclusive offer just for my listeners. You get $20 off and free shipping when you use the promo code MAJORITY at Brooklinen.com. Brooklinen is so confident that they offer you a risk-free 60-night satisfaction guarantee and a lifetime warranty on all their sheets and comforters. Lifetime! The only way to get $20 off and free shipping, use the promo code MAJORITY at Brooklinen.com. That's Brooklinen, Brooklinen.com. Promo code MAJORITY. Brooklinen, these are the best sheets ever. The other thing I did at my place, because for privacy reasons, I got new, I don't know what they call them, the roller shades, but semi-see-through. So light can come through. I don't know. I don't know exactly how to call it, but I know. Window treatments, one of those adulting terms that none of the millennials in this office care for.
Yuck.
When they're right, everything in your home looks better when you talk about your blinds. But when they're wrong, everything in your home looks like El Crapo. But let's be honest, taking the time to pick out and buy blinds sounds expensive, sounds kind of boring. And installing them yourself sounds harder than any self-respecting adult wants to admit. Now, not for me, but for others here. I'm not going to say names. Cool. But Blinds.com makes it really easy for you. Not sure what you want or even where to start? With Blinds.com, you get a free online design consultation. You just send them pictures of your house. They send back custom recommendations from a professional with what will work with your color scheme, furniture, and specific rooms. For me, I just said, I want like those clear ones that you can get through, and that was basically it. They'll even send you free samples to make sure everything looks as good in person as it does online, and every order gets free shipping. This is the best part. If you accidentally mismeasure or you pick the wrong color, if you screw up in any way, Blinds.com will remake your blinds for free. They've made it super easy for you. There's no excuse to leave those mangled blinds up. For a limited time, get up to 20% off of everything at Blinds.com when you use the promo code MAJORITY. That's Blinds.com, promo code MAJORITY for up to 20% off of everything. Faux wood blinds, the cellular shades, the roller shades, more. Blinds.com, promo code MAJORITY. That's BLINDS.com, promo code MAJORITY. Rules and restrictions do apply, folks.
Always.
And look, just a reminder, this show relies on its members for its daily existing. Become a member today at jointhemajorityreport.com. If you don't like those ads, best way to get rid of them is to become a member. And we cut the ads out. That's one of the things we do with the member show. Plus, you get the fun half and access to all our archives of the fun half. So check it out. Jointhemajorityreport.com. Okay, so we're going to get to Giga Lawson in just a moment. But understand that for some reason, things fell apart between Donald Trump and Justin Trudeau this past weekend. Part of it is Trump wants to renegotiate NAFTA with a five-year horizon, which, of course, makes it impossible. There is some looking at, apparently, the dispute resolution court, which would actually be, in my estimation, a positive reform. Trump wants to get rid of this. Trudeau, not so much. So it's not, you know, completely black and white. But here is Larry Kudlow going on Jake Tapper's show, State of the Union, explaining why Donald Trump basically lit our relationship with Canada on fire. Now, understand, because I need to put this in context. I did Larry Kudlow's show, I don't know, probably half a dozen to a dozen times. Very nice guy. Larry Kudlow, in the past, I'm not telling any secrets here. It was widely reported he had substance abuse problems. But as far as I know, was doing great for decades. He was one of those complete free trader, free market guys. Every response to every economic situation was to cut taxes and get rid of regulations and no protectionism. So when he goes into the Trump administration, not only does he have to completely change the ideological posture he's had for 40 years, but he's also got to deal with Donald Trump. That's my way of saying, forgive Larry if he seems a little bit under the weather in this interview. You'll see what I mean.
POTUS is going to Korea now, Singapore, to negotiate with the North Koreans. This is an historic event.
Absolutely.
Good things, wonderful things could come out of it.
We all hope so. Absolutely.
Right. Good
Thank
things.
You. Now,
yeah.
POTUS is not going to let a Canadian prime minister push him around, push him, POTUS, around President Trump on the eve of this. He is not going to permit.
Pause. I like it so you say, let other prime ministers push him, but not a Canadian.
Not Canadian.
Let's see.
POTUS.
POTUS.
President.
POTUS.
It would be a good thing.
Canadians
don't like him.
Good. Don't look at me.
Any
don't
like show them. Of weakness on the trip to negotiate with North Korea, nor should he.
So this was about North Korea?
Of course it was, in large part.
So because Trudeau said that as Trump
God
is going to Singapore.
God, Jake, don't look at me.
Jake. What do you think it was? I have a TV show, but I don't know logic. Jake. Jake. I like that name.
Jake. Okay. So
Trudeau said that as Trump was going to say.
Go back a little bit.
Was about North Korea?
Of course it was, in large part.
So absolutely. Because Trudeau said that as Trump was going to Singapore.
Well, you know, one thing leads to another.
Oh, I see. Okay.
They are all related. We had done our work in Quebec, north of Quebec. We did our work. We worked with the Western Alliance, pleased to do so. We get on the plane, and then this guy, Trudeau, starts blasting
us. So what's key here?
Kim must not see American weakness. It's that short. And you know, Jake, you've covered the beef for so long. How many times has President Trump said, if you hit me, I'm going to hit you back, okay?
Right.
And this is a case where Trudeau, it was like, I don't know, pouring collateral damage on this whole Korean trip. That was a part of Trudeau's mistake.
Pause for 1 second. I'll tell you, they, you pour that collateral damage on it. Jake, I love you.
Jake, he thinks we don't. I also like how he's doing that thing when someone's really blasted and they're trying to get like super specific details in to prove they're on point. Like, that was in northern Quebec.
Ontario. Quebec? North of Quebec.
North. It wasn't people confused those things with that detail, right? It's a Jake.
Continue.
Trudeau made an error. He should take it back. He should pull back on his statements and wish President Trump well in the Korean negotiations.
So,
these other members did. Yeah. Angela Merkel did. Macron did. I was right there. Theresa May did.
Okay, so
and then, all of a sudden, he went rogue.
They wanted to jump his boats. They all wanted to be on Trump as they were hugging him.
Wow.
But Justin Trudeau didn't do that because he's a bad guy, Jake. But you're a good guy. I have my own TV show, Jake. You're
unbelievable.
Stupid.
Well, what was fascinating was, I mean, in addition to the fact that we're watching this guy implode on TV, and, you know, as soon as you join the Trump administration, it's basically written in stone. It's like you're... but the other thing is that they all had the same exact talking points. Both Navarro and Kudlow said, at the very least, one in print, maybe the other on TV, that Trudeau stabbed them in the back, which has a nice resonance. That's the Lugen Flugenprassen.
Learned about that in Schlul. What they did to Hitler was so unfair.
All right, we're going to take a quick break. We're going to talk more about the Canadian-American relationship with Guy Lawson.
Tell Guy, shop.
Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we are back. Sam Seder on the Majority Report. It is always a pleasure to bring our next guest on. He is the author of multiple best-selling New York Times best-selling books. Octopus, the Brotherhood, Arms and the Dudes. Some people call it War Dogs. I don't. I call it Arms and the Dudes. Former Rolling Stone reporter, maybe still. And writing in the New York Times just this, like a day or two ago. First candidate tried to charm Trump. Now it's fighting back. Guy Lawson. Hello, Guy.
It has been too long.
It has been too long. Way too long.
Way too long.
My God. Ah,
thanks for having me. Thanks for having me. And yeah, I still write for Rolling Stone. It's just a lot of transition in that publication at the moment. So we're just letting things play out a bit.
Apparently, there's a lot of transition in all of media these days, Guy.
I'd say in all of the world.
Yes.
Let's begin with the idea that Canada is now America's biggest enemy. How did that happen? Let's unpack that a little.
Excessive politeness, maybe? What was it that... so you did that. I mean, this is pretty well timed because this is a long time reported piece, as if you were aware that that Canada and the U.S. were destined to have this kind of fallout. I mean, we just played a clip of Larry Kudlow, and we were going to play a clip of Seb Gorka and Peter Navarro completely attacking Trudeau and Canada later in the program. What's going on, Guy? You're Canadian.
Well, when you're talking about Gorka and Navarro and those guys, it just reminds me of another Trudeau, Gary Trudeau, the cartoonist. He once said a cartoon that stuck in my mind where there's a lecturer up on a podium, and he's saying, there's a little bubble of him saying, black is white, white is black. And one student's turning to another and said, wow, I didn't know anything of this. I didn't know anything about this stuff. It's like everything is upside down, right? So what happened was I realized that, you know, as a Canadian, an expat Canadian living in America, and a student of politics, I don't write about politics all the time, but I do from time to time, that that there was a moment impending for Canada-U.S. relations. And it seemed to me that Canada was playing it very well. In other words, that I've been reading about, I read Canadian press as well as American press, about this effort by the Canadians to sort of educate the political and business class, the elites in the United States, about the nature and extent of the trade relationship with Canada, and educate them away from these really false and deeply misleading assertions being made by the president about trade balances and you know, how Canada was preying on this, you know, sad, victimized United States economy. And so it began as a piece about this successful kind of, you know, resistance is the wrong word because it's such a slogan, but this successful counter propaganda kind of campaign that Canada, being so knowledgeable about the United States, was waging successfully. And that was kind of the piece until, you know, look, the emperor gets to wave his thumb up and down about this stuff, it would appear. And you know, so as little as like 2 weeks ago, I had a draft of the piece with the magazine that, you know, a joking sort of in my head title was How Canada Ate Donald Trump's Lunch, But Don't Tell Him,
right,
kind of thing. And then, you know, then the decision came to impose these tariffs and this escalation occurred. And I, you know, I can't speak to the personal piece of this. I was told some things off the record, or, you know, they're very cautious, the Canadians, you might be surprised to hear. But the highest level of Canadian, you know, leader, minister, but also the aides that surround them and inhabit the kind of the more detailed policy aspects of it, I think that they felt like very senior American officials were kind of ashamed and embarrassed and horrified by this, how it unfolded.
Right.
And that there was this sense of like, just here's a heads up, this is coming. I know, I can't believe it either, kind of feeling that was, it seemed on some level to be shared, the sense of disbelief. But so it wasn't like I was so prescient about this. It was just that I was present. And in a way, that's probably what the best thing that journalism can do right now is just be present. And I don't mean only do that, but one aspect of it is, you know, in the nightly, you know, I come home each evening and my wife just seems to not be able to turn off CNN. It just seems like a disease that's attacked our society. It's this kind of addictive, like, can you believe that just happened? Spectacle of high ratings and low intelligence. And so, you know, when you actually go and spend some time sitting with something like the Canadian-U.S. relationship and you understand how complicated, historic, meaningful, and economically beneficial it is, then, you know, you get out of that sort of loop. So that's what I was trying to do. And then all of a sudden the loop catches up with me, because it always does, right? This is,
right,
to use the wrestling term, this is the kayfabe. It's always got to be a story. And the story's always got to star, you know, Richie Rich. And here we are. So it wasn't like I thought, oh, hey, Trump's going to do Canada in. It was more like, oh, hey, what's going on with Canada-U.S.? And then you get to be there at the moment of the car crash. That's kind of what happened.
Right. And, you know, I mean, it's an interesting piece. You talk about Chrystia Freeland, or you sat down with her quite a bit, and which is always, I enjoy. I used to, I would have a drink with her after we would do hits on Dylan Radigan's show.
There you go. She's a really nice Canadian person.
Very nice. And she, you know, has been on this program multiple times in the past. And now it seemed like she was almost the point person for trying to reach out to America, like, you know, middle management, I guess, underneath Trump, to sort of, you know, educate and hopefully they could manage upwards. But that seems to have failed. That management upwards. I mean, just give us a sense, because my take on Trudeau, at least in the context of this, is that there's certainly reasons for Canada to be, you know, annoyed with the United States in some respects. But that element of the NAFTA agreement, the corporate resolution part, seems to be, and it'd be not terribly helpful to either, you know, country's populace, right? I mean, it hands over.
Which part? What are you referring to in the corporate resolution part? The sunset clause?
Not the sunset clause. That sunset clause seems ridiculous. Who wants to get into a deal that you have to re-up every year or 5 years or whatever it is? But the dispute resolution mechanism, where you know, it's basically a corporate tribunal, gets to decide what kind of environmental policies, consumer policies, worker protection policies each country has. I think that's a bad thing, and Trudeau seems to be you know, protective of that, anyways.
Yeah, in my lifetime, so you know, I grew up in the 70s, and as I say in the piece, which is at the New York Times website, I think I posted it on my Facebook page. Always pumping for those Facebook likes, Sam. You know that.
Yes, people like Guy's Facebook page. I'm surprised that you were actually able to upload that stuff, but people should go and like his Facebook page right now.
Kind of given up on it, but I'll just do it just in honor of our past in that regard. You know, Trudeau, in my lifetime, his father was very much not antagonistic, but watchful, cautious, skeptical of American power. I mean, you know, the Vietnam War, like, who did history prove out on that one?
Right.
And again, the Liberal Party during the period of the rule of Jean Chrétien, who was Trudeau's finance minister in the 70s and became prime minister himself in the 90s, did not participate in the invasion of Iraq, for example. And how's that turned out historically? There is this kind of feverish element to American politics, usually involving force and usually involving, you know, basically the military-industrial complex seeming to go on a profit spree. In this case, I'm not sure that there's even that much of an irrational rationale to this stuff. It just seems to be almost just purely id, ego, Freud, projection, whatever kind of psychological term, it seems to be derived from the personality and the sense of grievance of one person who seems to represent a significant piece of the American public. Significant enough, I think, that all Republicans are afraid of being primaried if they get them mad.
Right.
That kind of level.
Right.
So This is, you know, Chrystia Freeland is the foreign minister of Canada, or the minister of foreign affairs, I should say, to get it right. And she's a journalist, you know, she's like part of my tribe. I know people that know her, you know her, I know you, da, da, da. But, you know, she gave it all up for this political life. So I guess if you come on the Majority Report, that means you get to be the foreign minister somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, it happens. All I can tell you is it happens.
I'm trying to think which country I'm, Australia. You know, maybe Luxembourg for me or something. Right? Australia. I'm an Australian citizen. That's right. Yeah. Hey, that could be a job. She's not like just another journalist, though. She's like a very intelligent, unlike us, and, you know, multilingual,
right.
Harvard and Oxford. Not that that necessarily indicates intelligence, but she is a very smart person. But yeah, she was trying to convince middle management. It's more like upper management, but everything seems to be middle management that's not named Donald Trump anymore, right?
Right.
Everybody just seems to be taking their orders from him. You know, what she said in the piece, and man, I did not try to induce her. This was not one of those scenarios where you sort of say, well, is this like Hitler? What do you think? She volunteered it.
Right.
She started talking about Hitler. I didn't say, you know, does this remind you of Nazi? What about this whole kind of charismatic craziness? It came unbidden. And it came in a very calculated and, I think, meaningful way, like as in meaningful, not just that it's full of meaning, but it's the sense of urgency to it. I'm not privy to all she's privy to, like in terms of, you know, how people talk in, you know, having a drink with Wilbur Ross or...
Right.
Or, you know, what's his... Robert Lighthizer, the United States Trade Representative. I don't know how this socializes. I only get to be the guy with the tape recorder on. And it's all very above board and everything, but she does seem alarmed. And I mean, not a little.
Wow. That's scary.
And I don't want to scare people. I don't want to be contribute to this whole kind of madness cycle, but there seems to be something abroad. So, you know, as I report in the piece, you know, Wilbur Ross and Lighthizer and these guys all say it's like no big deal. I mean, I just was watching the news on the weekend, and there's Larry Kudlow, right?
Right.
That guy's like a TV talking head.
Right. We just played
a clip of him. Just,
yep.
Yeah, he's just like kind of like another kind of buffoon. There he is behind the podium. I just kind of just stopped and looked at that. And he's telling Canada it's overreacting. I think that Canada, after this many years of alliance and trading and fighting in wars, is entitled to its own opinion. You don't get to tell people what they're allowed to think and how they're allowed to react. For Canada, this is not an insignificant thing, and I think it's true for the other companies in the G6, as it's rapidly becoming.
Well,
you know, you don't get to change the rules. You don't get to bully. I mean, this is the fundamental thing that Freeland keeps saying, is that a rules-based international order isn't like an abstraction. It's not something that, you know, people want because, hey, they want human rights. It's because it's a deal. You can't just say, for example, you're going to buy someone's car. You know, they don't get to take out all the radio, the tires,
right,
and the engine and say, well, you know what? Screw you. I do that because I can. Give me my money. It's like it's rules-based means law-based means predictable means, you know, an alliance. So am I talking too much here, Sam?
No. Actually, I wanted to go right into that, like, because she says there are two related mega problems in the world right now. The first is the rules-based order is under more strain than any time since it was invented after World War II. I mean, we refer to that as, I mean, on some level, norms, but it's a little bit higher level of I guess... it's a little bit more edified than norms, right?
And when I was a lawyer. I don't. You went to law school for. Did you even last a year?
I lasted a year. Yes, Guy.
I got all the way through, and I studied it in England. And my sort of area of interest, you're going to get too much information about me, but I got interested in maritime law, of all things. And the reason I got interested in it because it's about international law, the sea, space, all these places are where the laws of nations and the laws of men kind of collide, and you have a real kind of complicated and fun to study as a kid and research and think about set of problems and issues. And but what it really boils down to is that, you know, ships passing, the amount of coastline that you have, fishing, all these things are legal things, but they're also things that are really like profoundly historical. And one of the things that disturbed me, when I say disturbed me, I mean, you know, whatever, it was an observation. One of the things I observed is how the United States was singularly lawless, but I mean not in the big frame of things, but in small frame things. And in the article, one of the things I write about is Brian Mulroney was the Prime Minister of Canada basically in the from most of the mid-'80s to the early 90s. And he was this big-chinned Irish Blarney guy who was made it like his number one job was to be friends with Ronald Reagan. And he succeeded at that. He got very sentimental with Reagan, and they'd sing When Irish Eyes Are Smiling Together, and they'd have their wives and all this kind of very sentimental, very kind of friend-related relationship with the United States. And Mulroney, you know, cites in the article these things, these two treaties, one's to do with the Arctic sovereignty and another's to do with acid rain. Those are both international law issues. They're kind of about sovereignty, but they're more about like soft sovereignty, like recognizing the rights of a smaller country to something that you're doing or you want. And so, yeah, man, you know, like this from Canada's point of view, this is that kind of American exceptionalism, which was often been displayed in small form in specific like rules about fishing or shipping and who gets to pay insurance and all that stuff, has now become like a hurricane. America is now saying no laws apply to us. There are no laws. We'll tell you the law as and when we feel like it, and we'll use any pretext. In this case, it was national security. So Canada is now a national security threat to the United States because of its steel and aluminum, and soon, because this is coming next, for cars and parts.
Let me just explain to people if they don't know, the only way the president has the ability to unilaterally increase these tariffs is under a provision that that claims that doing so is to protect against the national security threat. And so you have to label Canada a national security threat to argue that these tariffs, that you have the authority to unilaterally raise these tariffs. All right, well, let me just...
It's sort of like an analogy might be like, you know, you have the right to protect your property, right? So, you know, people can't come on and rob you. But this is like saying, okay, you're a threat to my property, so I'm going to go walk around town shooting people because you might come onto my property. Anyway,
right.
Go ahead. Sorry.
Well, so Krista Freeland had said there are two mega problems. One is that the rules-based order is under more strain than any time since after it was invited to World War II. That is sort of your analogy, which I think is super apt, that like when I sell you a car, it's implied that it's the radio that I saw when I looked at the car and the tires that I saw when I looked at the car and, you know,
it's not implied, Sam. It's explicitly provided. You know, that's the point. There's not an implication here. It's like, that's the deal.
Right. That's the deal. And then you show up and you've taken the radio out the car is on, or he's got cheaper tires and you're just like, sorry, man, that's just the way it's going to be. Give me the money,
yep,
or I'm going to beat you up, essentially. And then the second issue, she said, is authoritarianism, which is, she says, is starting to make gains on democracy. And that one is both a domestic, primarily a domestic issue, but you see it bleed over into the international sphere with that rules-based order sort of being under the strain.
Yeah.
Those two things happening, you know, they're related in that way. So let me ask you this. When Donald Trump goes and I know that you've had these conversations off the record, but let me just ask you, maybe you can cough once. Does Ivanka come up? Like, is this, could it, is this
no,
as petty
no,
as,
really, you know, really, it, really not, you know, and I think, you know, it's important to understand that there's like a, you know, I say in the article, and I think it's really true, it's like, what isn't said is so much more important than what is said, almost. Like, I shouldn't say almost. It is. There is, you know, when Donald Trump was elected, there was this sense of disbelief, and I don't need to share it with your listeners, about how that happened. And, you know, we can unpack that for all,
right,
you know, for eternity, Hillary Clinton's campaign and
right,
the deplorables and da-da-da-da-da. But everyone kind of knew it was going to be really different, and I think that's maybe why a lot of people voted for Donald Trump. But this is what the different looks like. This is, he spent a year essentially trying to be a grown-up, and is just, or I shouldn't say grown-up, but trying to be, he's had people like Rex Tillerson around him, or people who are sort of status quo conservatives. I think that's gone. I just think
right,
that's gone. And so, yeah, everybody that I talk to, I'll tell you two things about. One, everybody that I talk to, you would think that this is Caligula, or that people are, you know, everyone's afraid, essentially. And I don't mean afraid as in, you know, like, I think Canada's standing up for itself. I think they're ready for it. And I think this is, oddly enough, going to be a unifying issue for the Canadian people. I don't think that anybody in Canada that's got, you know, a grain of common sense thinks it's a good idea to start caving to Donald Trump about this stuff, because it will never end.
Right.
But there was a level of kind of don't say anything about the emperor, which ironically enough probably signals the end of the empire, because she talks about that too, this authoritarian streak. You know, it's so self-destructive, right? It's like, put it another way, Mulroney talked about the unemployment rate being so low in America and prosperity being such an evident fact, at least relatively speaking. Now, who's responsible for that? You know, I don't know. I won't weigh in on that, but I can tell you it's not entirely Donald Trump's doing. I don't believe that.
Right.
But there's this fear of talking about Trump in ways that would be provocative. So Ivanka would never come up. You know,
well,
nobody would ever say anything okay, personal. It was much more, much, 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 much more about what they weren't saying.
Well, all right, so let me ask you this. How much, when, from the perspective of the Canadians, and, you know, I guess I'm also curious about this in terms of the rest of the world, too, but I imagine there's some clues in it. When Canada looks at the United States, like, I think, like, many people in this country feel like, okay, the rest of the world is going to get the fact that Donald Trump is an anomaly, and that he, you know, like,
no,
people,
no,
right?
No.
That's not the dynamic, right? They look
no,
at this and they see
no,
Donald Trump is indicative
yes,
of a problem that's with America.
Yes, that's exactly right. There's no mulligan on this. There's no do-over. There's no, hey, he's not my president. There's no none, zero sense of he only speaks for the few. This is America.
Right.
That's it, man. There is no, none of your listeners, none are excluded from this. Sorry to say. And I mean that, I think that applies, you're going to see it, start to see it in personal lives. You're going to start to see it in travel and shopping habits. You know, my piece went up on the website. It's actually not in the magazine until next weekend, but I urged my editors to, like, put it up, because I said, look, I think this is going to blow up. I sort of knew that this was going to happen. Maybe, you know, when you're inside political elites, it's been my observation, you get to sort of know the news maybe a week before.
Right.
Maybe 5 days. When you're in journalism and you're actually inside a circle, you know, this was like the perfect kind of thing to report in a way, because it was like the Canadian foreign minister, like, who's thinking about that right now? Like, nobody, right?
Right.
So I had it all to myself, which was cool. And But I could tell just the noises that were being made by those around her a couple, 3 days ahead of the announcement of the tariffs, that they could feel the winds changing. And then I could tell a couple, 3 days ago. I mean, it's amazing to think, but it's only like Wednesday or Thursday of last week. I was in Washington interviewing her on Tuesday. And in my business, in the magazine business, this just never happens. Like, it was on the website on Saturday morning.
Right.
You know, like, usually it's weeks, months. And that's because the kinds of stories that the New York Times Magazine or other, like, long-form nonfiction journalism publications have is because you can predict events. You know, you can know in January that NAFTA is going to be interesting in June, and you can have a thoughtful piece about it. But this was like Tuesday to Friday.
Right.
So they were hinting to me that there was going to be a big blow up on the weekend at the G7. So they kind of knew. But yeah, you know, it's like, this is America now. This is not 50-50. This is not, you know, when they go high, we go low. Or when they go low, we go high. This is not relitigating 2016. This, Canada does not make a distinction.
And
I mean,
and
when I say that, I mean to say that it's a very sophisticated government, you know, and unless maybe less the political side than the sort of the permanent. So Canada has a Westminster system, which is, and the minister talked about this, which is like a permanent civil class, and they actually run departments so that you don't have all these. Every 4 years, you're swapping out different kinds of
right.
people. You get different ministers, but the what would they call it? The deep state is a thing in Canada, and it's a thing that people really like.
Well, we have civil service here too,
but a much higher level there, much much higher. So the appointed bits, it's just ministerial. You know, it's the next level, the assistant minister. Everyone else around him or her is permanent.
I mean, it would be so even when Trump is gone, this is still the same America that elected Trump as far as they're concerned. And maybe the next guy may be Obama.
Here's the analogy I use, right. Sam. This is the analogy, okay? This is something I think everyone can understand. It's like a kid getting beaten up at school and by a bigger kid, okay? So for that bigger kid, that becomes maybe something they think about once in a while that is on their conscience. Probably not. It becomes like they think, oh, well, that kid was a loser or whatever excuse they have for it. But for the kid who got beaten up, it's an everyday event because right. when's it going to happen again?
Right.
How do I walk to school? What about the other kids? Did they think I'm weak now too? I don't want to go to school there anymore. That's what it is. That's the emotional piece of it because it's not the tariffs. It's the showing that you can do it anytime you want. It's the kid giving you a wedgie. You know, can turn to a beatdown that you know can turn into even worse. So the Canadian response to this is not to do with the specificity. It's to do with the principle of it. You've walked up and punched me in the face. And I don't know if you just think of your listeners, I've been punched in the face. And I can tell you, it's a shocking thing when it happens for the first time. And it changes how you see stuff. It changes how you see yourself. It changes how you see other people. It changes how you understand just your basic interactions in life. And so I think that's what's happened to Canada. Canada got Donald Trump walked up to, you know, Justin Trudeau. Just think what we're talking about, right? And punched him in the face. And through that, punched the Canadian people. Not that everyone's a Trudeau fan in Canada.
Right.
But everyone feels the symbolic and the geopolitical and the historical insult of it.
Okay, so what do they do now? Like, I mean, Canada's reaction is going to be indicative of what other nations' reaction is going to be. What do they
do? Multiplied by 10, because, you know, like Britain. Okay. So, you know, Britain and the United States have a trade dispute. Okay. France and the United States, the European Union, those are incremental things. They hurt, but they're like, for example, you know, your currency being devalued by 5 or 10%, you know, it means you don't get that extra scoop of ice cream on your holiday, or you don't take the holiday. For Canada, you lose your job, your house, your family, your kids, you become homeless. Like, that's the kind of stake it is, right? So I'm actually was on the phone this morning. Hey, you guys are getting a hot exclusive. I won't go into any detail about it, but I'm thinking about doing a follow-up piece on this question because, like, that's what comes next. For Canada, this is not incremental. This is fundamental. This is not a change in the rules-based order. This is a change in your reality, your basic reality. To use the bullying analogy, which I think is a pretty good one, this kid, you know, how do I go to school? And if I can't go to school, how do I get educated? And if I can't get educated, how do I live my life?
Right. So what do? Are they finding a new school?
You know, homeschooling. I think that there's going to be an awful lot of Buy Canada movement. That's only going to be, again, incremental. Fundamentally, I think that they look, dude, you know,
I mean, what does Canada do? I mean, you know, Europe, I guess it looks to Europe.
I'll tell you what they have done. And this will give you a sense of what's coming and why this kind of trade dispute stroke war inevitably is lose-lose, but also escalates and also results in unpredictable, unwanted,
right,
and possibly disastrous consequences. I mean, I'll tell you, here's the thing. I was talking to one of the minister's aides, and one of the projects I've been toying with, and maybe your readers, your listeners can go to my Facebook page and tell me what they think about this, but I've been thinking for the last year, trying to figure out how to report on this new age in American life. About 3 months ago, I wrote a book proposal, and the book proposal was basically Canada explained to Americans. And the reason I thought of it is because, number one, the level of ignorance is just epic.
Right.
So we're, you know, Canada's a huge trading partner, historical ally. Everyone kind of makes fun of it and blame Canada and ha ha ha. And Michael Moore makes a movie about a war with Canada. And it's sort of like a joke, but it's actually not a joke. And I was trying to do but ironically enough, I was thinking about doing a kind of jokey book about Canada for the United States. And I'm still thinking about it. So I'd be curious to know what if people would be interested in reading that book. But Canada has imposed tariffs on Kentucky bourbon, because that's Mitch McConnell's
right
constituency, his state that he represents, and Wisconsin gherkins that specifically come from Paul Ryan's district. Yeah, like that. You know who's been lobbying against this whole mess is like the most conservative group in the country might be the Kansas Wheat Farmers Association.
Right.
That's where it's going to go.
It's interesting. I did see a piece. I can't remember what Canadian writer it was, but an opinion piece saying like, you should be attacking Donald Trump's hotels. You know, just right. Like no properties in this freezes assets in Canada.
I don't know that he has any. I'm not sure that he has. I mean, I'm really not sure of his state.
I don't know either. But so, but okay. So they turn the Canada's going to turn inward. But how does when they start to make?
Well, they'll turn inward, but also become, you know, like look, the ignorance of Americans about Canada, and I don't mean that in an insulting way. I just think it's in a kind of it's just, you know, like why bother with something so small,
right?
Is matched only by a Canadian's significant, profound knowledge of America because they need to know. And so I was going to tell you this story about this aide, what this aide said to me. I said, you know, I'm thinking about writing this book, and I don't know, but no one's going to read it, I said. He said, well, you never know. I said, what do you mean? He says, well, what's it going to look like a year from now? And I said, what do you mean, like a trade war? And he goes, well, who knows? So that, meaning to say that there are people. And I'm not saying he's the minister or this person was the minister or that this is something that's, you know, being contemplated, like the Canadian generals are standing around a map, you know, going, yeah, we'll flank them through Saskatchewan and we'll take North Dakota in a day. But there are people in Canada who feel like all bets are off.
Well, first off, take North Dakota is what I would say to Canada. And there's a couple other states.
I've been there.
There's a couple other states.
I would prefer say, Napa Valley.
Or I would say, take New York State. And we're Canadian.
There you go.
And I mean, you know, so basically,
for years I've made this joke. that, you know, like you have this anti-terrorism thing and they talk about Muslims. If it ever really got to something, how would you catch Canadians?
Well, that's what I was just about to say. This time next year, we're going to be talking about the wall. And it's not going to be the one on the Mexican border. It's going to be the one.
The Game of Thrones.
The wall in the north. Well,
it's ridiculous.
Guy Lawson, we will put a link to the piece in the New York Times. And we'll have you back on soon, buddy. I don't know what.
Yeah, you know, it's been too long. I'm sorry it's on such a strange subject, but I hope that it was good for you. I enjoyed it.
Well, we loved it. Guy, thanks so much. And folks, we will also put a link to Guy's Facebook page. I want a 35% increase in likes.
That'll be like 7 people.
Well, there you go. Bingo. We can hit that. Thanks, Guy. Talk to you later, buddy.
Thanks, man.
All right, bye. Ciao. Guy Lawson, ladies and gentlemen. Bloop. How about that? A year from now, we're in small border skirmishes with Canada.
Team Canada.
Don't they all just ride their horses anyways, like those Mounties? Like, it's not, well, we can take them.
I mean, a horse makes you pretty capable.
I guess that's true. I'm also, if we have to make some hard decisions, I may. Canada looks awfully appealing.
They would really up their nuclear arsenal if they took North Dakota, though.
That'd be huge. And it would help in terms of electoral politics in this country. That's what I'm saying. Take a couple of states, 6-8 senators worth of states, I feel like they could take pretty easily. I don't know. It's something to think about. Maybe we can all just start a letter writing campaign to Trudeau and get him to like mobilize the Canadian forces. Folks, couple of house cleaning. What? Just a reminder: you can become a member of this program by going to jointhemajorityreport.com. Also, today is Monday, which means tomorrow is Tuesday. Tomorrow, on the Michael Brooks Show, you can prepare for it by going and subscribing on iTunes, and that way you don't even have to think about it; it just shows up on your phone in some way. Or you could also, I guess, subscribe to our YouTube channel and get notified that the show is going live. But in the event that you don't do those two things, I will tell you right now who's going to be on tomorrow night. It's...
Oh, you didn't have it?
I don't know.
I thought you had it, Sam. Mike Hanna and Cody Johnson.
Mike Hanna is that the British guy.
Mike Hanna, well, he's South African, actually.
South African. What, he did
Al Jazeera, yes.
And he didn't know it. What was
and
it?
He didn't, but it turned out he had read the letter.
Oh, that's right. Yes.
There's because a report about the letter. He is.
Donald Trump
totally
said he had not read the letter, but it turned out
he had read the letter. Yes. We're talking.
You should have him just re-record that for you, your show.
I do kind of want to. Send him the.
Just get it so that we could use it as a clean audio drop. And meanwhile, Jamie's The Antifada is available on patreon.com/TheAntifada. And on this week's episode is...
Well, this is our second ever premium episode, which is very exciting. And in this episode, we take questions from our awesome listeners. So...
This is like your own private AMA type of situation.
Yeah. Yeah, and the questions were very high quality. We're very impressed. We talked some shit on the Doors, as per usual. We talked a little bit about goth music.
Just alienate more people.
Talked about, you know, politics, obviously, quite a bit.
Goth politics.
Check
and Matt, you do not answer any of those type of questions on the... On Literary Hangover, is that right?
I will be doing Q&As in the future.
Okay.
Yeah. I will be doing that.
But people can subscribe on iTunes to that one, too.
Yeah, they can. Rip Van Winkle coming up this week, and...
Wow.
When I get to 250 patrons, I will be starting a Twitch account.
Whoa.
Streaming video games.
Whoa. Wow, that's... You're really going way out there.
You'll force me to do.
You're
it.
Gonna force you to do play.
I
video
would
games?
Totally not have done this otherwise.
And if he
if
gets,
I get to 350, I'll gonna, smoke weed while I do that.
What are you gonna do? Like, and if I get 400, I'm gonna smoke from a bong.
Nah, when I get 500,
if I get 500, I'll carve out a Red Delicious and make that into a bong.
When I get 500, I'm getting VR goggles.
There you go.
Kind of like how when we hit 183, I'm going to take acid and try to make a pizza and show you the video.
There you go. 1,000.
Oh, and I have to say, don't forget, 2,000 on TMBS. We already have the Glenn Beck food buckets ready. That's going to be so disgusting.
Wow.
I will be tuning in for that.
That is commitment.
Slightly different era.
You start training my stomach.
Right? That was when Reagan suggested it, and with the who's what's his name? What's the evangelical guy's name?
Baker.
Baker. Jim Baker. And then Reagan, I think, already had Glenn Beck in food. He's like, oh, I already got the Glenn Beck stuff, just waiting.
Of course,
Matt's been training all his right. whole life with the fast food.
Matt's gonna win. There's no doubt. I'm going to have to be taking like Ayurvedic tinctures, and I'm going to go to your friend's hippie store and stock up to protect my stomach.
Nice.
All right, folks, quick break. Head into the fun half, 646-257-3920. You can IM us through the app at majorityapp.com. See you in the fun half.